fifth time in the last six seasons, the Dutch are the champions.
This is Gary O'Neill to win it.
They've got it! Terrific header, Callum Robinson, super ball in.
Great feeling, we have to treasure these nights.
Well, hello there. Welcome along to the RTE Soccer Podcast, joined as ever by James O'Toole and our guests today, a couple of regulars on the RTE Soccer Podcast, Pat Fenlon and Paul Curry. Lots to discuss, lads. Of course, the Irish situation, another defeat, losing to Wales, hot on the heels of that 3-0 defeat at Wembley to England. So the long wait for Stephen Kenny for a victory, even a goal, goes on. We'll also discuss the under-21s losing at home to Iceland. So their qualifying hopes all but gone. Promotion for Longford Town, congratulations to them, beating Shelburne. But of course, despair for Shelburne and their supporters. We'll be chatting to Vinnie Faherty, the life and times of Vinnie Faherty of Galway United. And we'll look ahead to the FAI Cup quarterfinals looming at the weekend. But let's start, shall we, with the Irish situation. Actually, I'll go to James first, because that's the tradition. We have to go to James first on the podcast. So, James,
we don't have to.
The last week. Yeah, we do. It's just tradition. You know, I'm a traditionalist. How's your week been?
Been a good week. What a mental day we had yesterday as far as the under-21s, then the playoff final, and then obviously the senior team against Wales. It's been a good week. A bit sad today to be here on a Monday and not actually putting together Soccer Republic. But there we go.
But there will be one next week, won't there, after the Cup quarterfinals, I presume?
No, we're straight into the Cup semi-finals then. The quarterfinals are Friday, okay. And then the semi-finals are on Monday and
that's
Tuesday.
Right. Is that Soccer Republic done and dusted, or is there one post-Cup final?
No, that's it, done and dusted for this season, unless one comes up after the Cup finals. I was thinking about it the other day. I think that's the 451st episode, if you include M&S going back all the way to 2008.
Yeah, and I've watched them all. Now, I have a few to pick up on over the last few weeks, but I've watched them all right from its infancy. When was it, 2010 or
2008 we started. If you remember the first game, Pat probably remembers the first game we showed live. And that was Bowes versus Pats. And Keith Fahey's wonder goal from the touchline
that,
just under the Jody stand won the game.
I do remember, yeah, it was a brilliant strike in fairness to him.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's start with the international scene, shall we? Defeat again for Stephen Kenny and the Irish, but it has to be factored in, of course, so many absentees. Pat, obviously there's a degree of understanding about the situation. It's a new management team. We're in the middle of a pandemic. And I mean, the amount of withdrawals from the Irish squad in advance of the England game, but particularly obviously for the Wales game, which was arguably the more important game of the two in terms of the seeding process and the Nations League and avoiding relegation. He's been dealt a very tough hand. But there comes a time, doesn't there, where people start saying, look, we need some sort of tangible return, some sort of reward for the efforts. All very well talking about good football and a footballing philosophy. But if the defeats keep on coming, it's a difficult situation, isn't it?
Yeah, it always is for a manager. But I think you've got to look at a bigger picture. And that's what I'm trying to do at the moment, is look at it and think, OK, where we were before Stephen came in, going back even before the previous manager. And the one complaint we always had about the team was we had no shape about us. We had no way of playing. We looked devoid of you know, ideas. But I honestly thought yesterday, the England game for me, listen, was a game we shouldn't have taken. So I would write it off, because they're a completely different level. But I've always said that since Stephen's come in, can we go and compete against the teams that we're supposed to compete against? I was impressed yesterday with the performance. I know we didn't score, and that's obviously the main crux of the problem, and it has been for a long time. But when you analyse the game, you try to take it as a manager or a coach, and you look, I mean, our shape in relation to when we hadn't got the ball, when we had the ball, was all really positive. You know, we pressed the ball really well against Wales. Again, didn't take some of the chances we created. But like you say, it's always down to results for managers, and unfortunately, that's what people will be judged on. But, you know, I'm not writing her off myself at the moment. Stephen has been a little bit unlucky in relation to the way things have fallen for him. But sometimes that happens in football, and you just got to roll your sleeves up. But I see a way of playing. I still think we overplaying too much can cause us a problem, and I still think that was a bit of an issue on against Wales. But, you know, I see a dynamic in how we want to play, how we want to go and press the ball against teams that we're capable of beating. I think that's the key for me, is how we change that mental attitude to going into games that we can positively win. And I think we've seen that. We haven't won any of them. We haven't scored any goals. So it's probably a little bit rich to say that. But I just
but
hope
is that
people...
the biggest concern, Pat, that we haven't scored any goals? Whatever with the results.
I mean, that's been a concern since Robbie Keane left the international scene. You know, that's not just a concern today or tomorrow. That's been a concern for a while, and that's not an excuse. When you go to the level we're at, you know, some of our players being decent. You know, I'd like to see us have everybody in the team with a bit of pace, with the likes of Conley and Ida in the team, where we can counter-attack them when we pick the ball up and our press is good. You know, so, but people will judge it on results at the end of the day. That's what people will look at, and Stephen will know that, and the staff will know that. So it's about moving on to the next one and seeing you pick up a win. Obviously be massive during the week and score a few goals would just take a little bit of pressure off everybody, I suppose, and then go into a bit of a break where you can look at the bigger picture. But there is some positives coming out of it, I have to be honest. But there's also that negative vibe around, you know, us not being able to score goals.
Paul, what's your take on it? I mentioned the absentees, you know, no Seamus Coleman, John Egan, Enda Stevens, three players there who could arguably be in a back four or a back three. Alan Brown also forced out, Aaron Connolly, James McCarthy, the list goes on. And at times you feel like you're making excuses almost for the situation, but it's a difficult one that he's inherited and he's got no luck at all so far.
No, he hasn't, Adrian, and Pat has picked up on a number of key points there. And I guess from an attacking point of view, that's just where the question marks will always linger. And I do believe that, particularly with Conley and Robinson out of the team, you can see that we are really lacking a lot of pace in the final third, and there's no real substitute for pace in that final third as regards to a threat. And I guess given that and given our lack of creativity, we are still struggling to create a number of clear-cut opportunities in any given match, and that is probably the one major worry that I would have. Yes, we're having much more possession, yes, we're looking more in control, but are we retaining the ball in threatening positions on the pitch? Like, are we really probing? Are we really looking to get down the sides of back fours? Are we getting in behind teams, and are we creating a lot of chances? And the answer for that is just no. Yes, we are putting the pieces of the jigsaw in place whereby we look as if we've more structure in regards to getting it from the keeper to the back four and into midfield, but I just don't see us at this moment in time having that potent threat and maybe that passer to get us into that positioning behind opposition's midfield and then really getting that back fours. And that would be the one sort of question mark I would have. Do we have the players to come in and really change it from that point of view? And do we have those creative sparks to create chances to ultimately score goals and win games? And then I think Pat also picked up on it in regards to overplaying. I thought there was definitely moments against England where I thought we were nearly a bit naive in regards to some of the areas of the pitch that we were playing, and we were nearly letting ourselves or creating problems for ourselves. And sometimes, you know, Adrian, throwing the ball up to someone like Adam Ida and getting runners off him is not the worst option. I watched England play Belgium last night, and Belgium, who were the number one ranked side in the world, had no problem with throwing it up to Lukaku and playing off and just mixing up the game a bit. And maybe that's something that I wouldn't mind seeing a bit more of. It's just maybe not being as predictable, and I'm just giving oppositions different pictures and different patterns of play to deal with. But there are positives, you know. There definitely is, like Pat said, the structure of the team looks much better, the shape of the team looks better, there's an idea of what it is we're doing with and without the ball, but I just think those final pieces of the jigsaw still look a bit off.
Yeah, James, can we get those missing jigsaw pieces, do you think?
I think you can. I think once the entire squad is together as a whole, with nobody missing from it, I think that's when you start working on it. I agree with what the two lads have said about the lack of goals and where we're going. And it's nice to play football, but as Paul said, sometimes you just can't, and you have to take the other option as well. So I also agree with what Pat said. International managers don't get enough time with their players. And with the game, the initial friendly cancelled, it was a perfect time for Stephen to spend time on a training pitch and get the squad together as he wanted and run through things with them. So I think the friendly against England wasn't needed, and the time could have been spent, I feel, better within the camp if that wasn't there. And it affects your coefficient as well when you go into a match like that and you come out on a loss and then you follow it up with another loss. So there's certain things that can be done, and I think that was one of the things that could have been left aside so we could have spent time with the actual squad itself.
Pat, are you hopeful about Wednesday's game? Because it's a very important game now for a whole variety of reasons, but I mentioned the list of players who are going to be absent, but add to that Jeff Hendrick sent off against Wales. Jason Malumbi is also suspended.
Yeah, we're down a lot of bodies, there's no doubt about that. And you know, you've had the two lads, like Malumbi's come in and done quite well. Hendrick, you know, has been around the block a while for us. So again, it'll give people an opportunity to come in and play. Am I hopeful that we can get something out of it? And absolutely. It's like I said, it's them games that we have a chance, that we should have a chance of beating teams, that we've got to go and get on the front foot and play. And I think we'll do that in the game against Bulgaria. It gives us, the last thing we need to do is lose that game again. And it puts us in a really difficult situation going into you know, World Cups and draws that are going to come ahead. So it's a game that we probably got to go and win. You know, I think when you're looking at the games, and Paul's a good point, I think sometimes, you know, and Stephen came out about changing the way we want to play and changing the philosophy, and that's fine, and that takes time. And I don't necessarily think that's his overall job. I think the thing about it is you've got to mix the game up. And I did watch the game last night, Paul, with Belgium and even some of the other teams in Europe and even in the Premier League. Teams are getting the ball forward a lot quicker than they were, you know, even 2 years ago. You know, that build-up through the towards is not... If you watch Liverpool even, you know, they get the ball forward quickly into dangerous areas where they're going to cause teams problems. You know, and it's just about mixing the game up, I think, for us, and finding a little formula that suits. If you're going to play Adam Ida as a main striker, it can't be all in front of him all the time, because he wants to get down the side of players and get down the side of centre-halves. You know, the one slight concern I've had is that we've looked a little bit vulnerable defensively, which we probably haven't for a period of time. You know, and again, that can be down to systems where you're inviting your fullbacks to push on really high and really early and isolating again the likes of Duffy at times. So listen, there's loads of work to do. There's no doubt about that. I just think, you know, I'm just hoping people don't panic and don't, you know, just write it off at the moment, because there is the team at the moment for me, or the squad at the moment for me, is obviously well shorn of what everybody. Yeah. But there's something in relation to what they're trying to do. We've complained for a long time about our international team and being devoid of anything when they go into games. I don't see that at the moment. I think one of the big keys for me yesterday was the pressing of the ball was really, really good. And I'll tell you the other side of this. I mean, Daryl Horgan wasn't in any of the squads. He's come in, he's been really, really good in the games for us, you know. So that's a plus. And if you're looking for positives, I think he's a player that's on the front foot as well. So I hope it turns quickly, because I've been in that situation as a manager, and you can keep talking about we're playing well, we've been great, and people eventually just switch off and say, no, you're not winning games, you're getting beaten, you haven't scored a goal. You know, so we need to just get that off our back at the moment.
And does he stick, Paul, with Adam Ida up front? He's, you know, still young, just 19 years of age, very raw. But at this stage, does he persist with Adam Ida?
I think given the injuries and the problems that we've had in the squad and how unlucky he's been, I think you do. I thought Adam was particularly good against England, which was a really difficult game for him. He was up against three centre-halves, and at times he looked quite an isolated figure, but I thought his hold-up play was actually really good in that game. And what he has as a front-man, Adrian, is he has that ability, like Pat said, to actually run in behind. He's big, he's quick, he's powerful, but he can also take the ball into feet and hold it up. Now, I didn't think he was as good at doing that against Wales. I thought it bounced off him a couple of times, but that's all part of the learning curve. Like this, Adam Ida, as well as, you know, your likes of Jason Knights and Aaron Collins, have a long way to go in their career, so it's very difficult to expect that it's going to be perfect. But I think I've seen enough of him, particularly in that England game, that you can build off him and you can use him as your focal point going forward. And hopefully, you know, there's a couple of chances within the Bulgaria game, if he is to play, that he can potentially get a goal. But I think with regards to building something and using and having that focal point up front, he's probably not a bad option at this moment in time.
And Pat, there's been a bit of a clamour amongst League of Ireland fans, and certainly from Shamrock Rovers fans in particular, to see more of Jack Byrne. Would you like to see him maybe starting now on Wednesday, given the absence of a Jeff Hendrick, or what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think on the basis of the amount of players that we're missing, I'm sure Jack could be looking and thinking, well, with all these players out, if I don't get a chance now, well then, you know, I'm going to struggle to play when they all come back, you know. So, but listen, that's up to Stephen. I think he did enough yesterday in that he gave the ball away, obviously, for the goal. But that's what you get with Jack. He's going to take risks. That square ball at international football, that they're onto it so quickly, you know. But he did play some really positive forward passes, which he does, you know. So, listen, I think the one thing I'll say is the likes of Ida and Malumbi, I think you've got to stick with them now. I think you've got to give them a period of time to try develop as players. You know, even if you look at the Welsh team, the young players they brought in a few years ago, you know, Giggs kept him in the squad, kept playing them, and you know, I know they weren't great yesterday, but I think we're now in the situation where the likes of Oida, Malumfi, Conley, they've all got to start to play now, you know, because we've tried all the other ones that are there, the older ones, and it hasn't been any better. So but should Jack get a game? Yeah, why not? I think he's been fantastic this year for Rovers. It's a massive, massive step up. I was only thinking, you know, from Cardiff to Finn Harps, it's a bit of a difference, you know, more ways than one. You know, but he has shown his quality this year, and it's on the pitch that Jack does his talking. In fairness to him, he's been excellent for Rovers, and I'd have no fear of him playing. That's for certain. Absolutely no fear of him playing.
Yeah, I don't think Stephen will have a fear of him playing either. Like, when you consider he come on against Bulgaria and the Aviva, created an assist for over the 3-1 win. So I think he's shown, especially against this type of opposition, he can come on and play really, really well. And I think this is one that Stephen might well give him his chance and see what he can do. Like, at this stage, there's not a lot they can lose out on, so they may as well try different things around the midfield and get someone who's going to create something. As Paul says, Ida likes to run around the shoulders of people, and he's not really good at the ball pushed straight up to him. So someone like Jack, who's able to find balls like that from midfield, could well be the influence we need in a game like this.
And just a word on Wednesday's game, Paul, in summary. Obviously, we'd dearly love to see a win. We just need a goal or something just to give a positive. I mean, I know you're all talking about the footballing philosophy, and it's going to be a long-term thing in many respects, but it is a results business. But gosh, you'd love to see a goal, wouldn't you?
We're not asking
for much.
Is that
what the game is about, apparently? It's about goals.
A goal from open play and not a set piece, preferably. We would love to see a return for the players' endeavour and the effort that's been put in from the management team. And I think solely from a confidence point of view, we need to start picking up points of some form. And so the players who are playing in this system and the new players that we're trying to bring in are able to harness confidence from a certain result. So I think a good performance of at least creating a couple of chances and looking a bit more solid at the back would certainly be a positive. But I think a scrappy 1-0 win would probably be taken at this moment in time.
Pat, you spent a lot of time in Belfast, obviously, given your, you know, Linfield, the fact that you're general manager of Linfield. The Slovakia result against Northern Ireland, I know they lost to Austria on Sunday night in the Nations League, but the Slovakia result losing in extra time, I'm sure you've been talking to people, and the mood must be pretty down after that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it was a bit like ourselves with Slovakia, you know, particularly with Northern Ireland. They thought, obviously, get a home tie, one game away in that qualification, and they didn't play well on the night, I have to be honest. I did watch it again, and played in fits and starts, did okay at certain times, but didn't really carry, a bit like ourselves, didn't really carry a goal threat at all on the night. And you know, Slovakia looked a little bit sharper than they did and took the both goals well. Although the goalkeeper probably didn't cover himself in glory for the second one, but yeah, really disappointing, because it's like ourselves as well. When you're talking about the football and qualification from a football perspective, but then you go back and you look at the qualification from a financial perspective and how that impacts the game locally. And it's the same for them as it is for us down here, that if we're not qualifying for major tournaments, that revenue that comes from that is huge. You know, so that has a knock-on effect to all the projects you want to do down the road.
Paul, you were at the Irish under-21s beaten by Iceland at Tala Stadium 2-1. And there was such a buzz when Stephen Kenny came in, all the Kenny's kids in charge of the under-21s. And a campaign that had promised so much is going to fizzle out now. It's disappointing. And obviously from Jim Crawford's perspective, he lost so many players through injury and then call-ups to the senior team. It was a difficult job he inherited as things have played out. But there was a disappointing outcome at Tala Stadium.
Yeah, there was. And I think you touched on it there in the sense that there has been so much change within that 21s team. You know, I always look at the spine of the team and can you keep that spine of the team consistent over a period of time? And you just look at the bodies that's come out of it. You know, you've Queevan Kelleher, you've Dara O'Shea, you've Jason Malumbi, Troy Parrott didn't play, they didn't start the game yesterday. You've lost Aaron Connolly and you've lost Adam Ida. And I really do believe that had those players been available to Jim Crawford yesterday, they would have gone on and win that game, because we were in control for the majority of the match. There was large spells of possession, similar to what we speak about with Stephen Kenny's side, but they just lacked maybe that touch of class or that bit of guile in the final third to really punish Iceland when they got into those positions. And they were a bit unlucky, you know, they controlled the game, and a nice bit of quality from Eirikur Johnsson some put Iceland ahead. But other than that, they created very little in the first half. They sat back, they let Ireland have the ball and just couldn't find a way to go. And Troy Parrott came on at half time. We looked a little better, and once we got the goal, we never really kicked on again. So it was unfortunate. And you know, we looked to this 21s team, and yes, there's been huge positives, but it would have been brilliant had they been able to go on and qualify for the European Championships and to take that experience with them. But it wasn't to be. But when you look back, Adrian, on the last 18, 24 months and the players that have come through and have progressed onto the senior squad, and then there's still players within that, you know, squad that was involved yesterday, the likes of Troy Parrott. I really like Connor Coventry. I thought Connor Matheson and Nathan Collins were good at the back. There's a good pathway for those players, and there seems to be enough talent within that squad that there should be more players that will kick on. But a disappointing result yesterday. They probably just didn't do enough on the day.
Yeah, I fully agree with Paul. I think the withdrawal of several players out of that squad, and even the call-up into the senior team, I don't know whether a discussion was had of whether those players should have just been left in the under 21s, because this was an ideal opportunity to qualify for a championship. I'm sure Jim and the rest of the backroom staff were unhappy with it happening. Some stage, like, you have to look at who has the chance of qualifying here. And yesterday it was the under 21s, and I think that some of the players could have been left in that squad to help them get over the line in what is a very, very tight group. And now, as Paul said, like, it looks like Iceland will just edge them out on this last game of the campaign, which is unfortunate, because it would have been great to have an under 21s team doing what we've seen the under 18s and under 17 and 16s and stuff like that do over the last couple of years, come through elite groups and qualify for championships. So it's just that under 21s, we get them into a championship now, we'd be absolutely flying. And I think yesterday was just a desperately unhappy missed opportunity for them.
Pat, how do you hear what James is saying there about the under 21s? And obviously, you know, Stephen had his needs in terms of calling up players, but that it would have been such a boost to Irish football to see the under 21s qualifying for a major tournament for the first time ever, that maybe, you know, leave well enough alone, leave the squad as is and give them every chance to qualify.
Yeah, listen, it's a very difficult situation, that, because, you know, at the end of the day, Stephen's the senior international manager, and if he wants to pick players, well, then he's every right to do that. I get the picture what James is staying in relation to qualifying for a tournament. You know, but it's I know Jim and Rennie quite well, and I know that they're obviously a lot of players down. Like Paul said, I think there's no doubt if they had all the players that were available over the course of the tournament, then it may have been a different result yesterday. But I think it's difficult to say that, you know, a senior international manager shouldn't be able to pick any player he wants that he thinks is good enough to play for his country. So it's not a great dilemma. We don't have loads of players. You know, we look at England, and they made a decision a long time ago to make sure they qualified the teams for tournaments at all ages, so they get used to that mentality. You know, do we have the pool of players to do that? I don't think so. You know, so our best players, as soon as they make progress in the 21s, I would think will be elevated into the senior squad. At the end of the day, that's really what it is about, is getting players through to our senior team. You know, so it's a difficult situation for both sets of managers. And unfortunately, it didn't work out for either on the day.
All right, let's move it on to Longford Town. Congrats to them, back in the Premier Division. They won the promotion relegation playoff, beating Shelburne by 1-0 at Richmond Park on Sunday afternoon. Rob Manley missed a penalty and then scored the only goal of the game. Afterwards, Mike McCartney got the reaction of the Longford Town manager, Darragh Doyle.
It's a mad feeling. It's a great feeling. It's one that I've been feeling all week. I've been positive all week. The lads and the group of players we have are nothing short of outstanding. We got into the playoffs. We were a little unfortunate that due to a few inconsistencies, we didn't challenge for the title. But to get promoted with this group and the manner and how we've done it, it's an amazing feeling. It feels great. We're at the top table where Longford Town deserve to be. It's a brilliant club. The facilities, the people involved, the supporters behind us, them lads there that are involved with this team, they've given everything they have for Longford Town and me and my staff. I can't commend our whole group enough for what we've now achieved. We set out at the start of the season to have a special season, and by God, we've got that now. That was a special last couple of weeks, and for us to get promoted, it's just amazing. It's an amazing, brilliant feeling. It really is.
No, it's a club with great history. I mean, I can remember in the 80s going to the old games in Abbey Carton and standing on the sideline. But now you've got new facilities. What does it mean to the club to be going back up there?
It's huge. Listen, we want to be challenging. We're so hopeful that, you know, with COVID and restrictions and no fans being allowed at games, we're hopeful that we can get crowds back in. We'll be playing the top teams again. And listen, we have a lot of work to do now, and the work starts again for next season. But we want to be playing the best teams in the country. We want to put ourselves up there against these teams, and we'll be putting a fierce amount of effort in it now to make sure we do. It means everything. It's huge for the club. It's huge for the town. It's huge for the players. Everyone involved with the club. It's just a massive achievement.
You had a great run in the playoffs. Did that give you extra confidence coming in here today? Because you played like a Premier Division team.
Yeah, no, listen, we really did. I've said it from day one with this group that I've been full of belief in the group of players that we put together. I said it previously, inconsistencies in the group cause us not to be able to challenge at the top of the table. But you ask Bray, you ask UCD, you ask Galway, look what we've gone on to achieve now. And I knew we had this within us. And the lads have gone out there and put the work in that we've asked them. The amount of hours, commitment, stuff that we've loaded them with, and they've really bought into it. And you could see out there with the team how they played for each other, how they worked for each other. You talked about how we played in our play, and that was excellent. But you can have that, but if you don't have the work rate, the desire and the will to help your teammates, you won't go anywhere, and that's something we have in abundance.
That's Darragh Doyle speaking to Mike McCartney after yesterday's win over Shelburne. Shells, of course, had Luke Burns sent off in that game as well. We'll come on to Shells very shortly, but Paul Curry, great achievement by Longford Town and by Darragh Doyle. They had to do it the hard way as well, coming through the playoffs. They defeated UCD, Galway and Shelburne, of course, on Sunday afternoon. So it's a credit to Darragh Doyle and everybody involved, isn't it?
100%. And, you know, they were very close to going out against UCD and only, I guess, salvaged that game. But when I saw them against Galway, I thought they were superb, Adrian. And actually, based on that and given where Shells were at, I thought they were going to go on and win yesterday. And I guess what Darragh Doyle will be really pleased with is that they're quite tense affairs, particularly the Galway game and then on to the Shells game, where there's a lot at stake. But the players really, really went out yesterday and they expressed themselves really well. You know, they play quite an attractive brand of football, but they've also got threat in the final third, and they create a number of chances yesterday. They moved the ball around really well, and then when they needed to dig in that last 10-15 minutes when they were really under the cosh, they were brilliant defensively. So a major achievement. Like, I can't imagine they've one of the bigger budgets in that first division. I know they had a number of academy graduates who had come through the club in that first team yesterday, and to go on and to achieve what they have achieved is superb. And you know, Darragh Doyle mentioned there that there's a lot of work to do in regards to next season, but they definitely have a really strong foundation and a good platform on which to build on. And there's certainly a lot of energy and enthusiasm in the team that it'll be interesting to see how they get on next season.
And there were great scenes, James, on Sunday night in Longford Town with a cavalcade of cars going through the town, honking the old hooters, as they say. And they've got a very strong core support at Longford Town. They have a fine setup as well. Now, they'll be trying to consolidate in the Premier Division next year, but it's great for everybody who's soldiered for Longford, for the cause over the last few years.
Yeah, it's great. It's interesting yesterday as well to see that the Section O fans made their way up onto a balcony to watch the game in Inchicore yesterday for the game. It's great for them. I'm sure around Bishopsgate last night, there was plenty of St. Mel's sank as they celebrated it was a great victory. We mentioned it last week that when you come into this kind of game, it's the person who is on a roll usually wins it, and Longford deserved to win it yesterday. They were really, really good. They soaked up pressure and then they delivered pressure themselves, and Shelburne just looked off it. But it's great for Longford. It's a very, very difficult league to get out of. And the way they've come out of, as you said, UCD in the bowl, then Galway in the bowl, and then Shelburne in Richmond Park yesterday. It's great for them. I'm over the moon for Darragh. He took over from Neil Fenn going into the Cup 2 seasons ago. Remember, he played against Bowes' first game, I think, of the Cup, and they lost that in penals.
Yeah, but, played very well too then.
Yeah, they played really well that night. It's great to another young manager, although we've lost a young manager down to the first division in Ian Morris. It's great to have another young manager in Dyer coming up to see how he pits himself up against some of the Premier Division managers. But it'll be great. Again, it's another club. And I hate to say this, it's great to have another club outside of Dublin in the league, because then it gives us more of a League of Ireland. So it'll be good to see how they get on next year.
James.
Yes.
it didn't go unnoticed. The plug there for St. Mel's. I presume that's a craft beer and you're looking for free product, are you?
No. They are actually they're sponsors of the club as well, so it's great to see them.
Well, you dropped it in very subtly.
Do you like it? It's good, wasn't it?
Yeah. Do you like St. Mel's beer?
They're very good. Any craft beer around Ireland is very, very good, Adrian. You should know that by now.
Pat, from a Shelburne perspective, because, of course, you've got great ties with Shelburne. Mm. We were talking even last week. A few weeks ago, Shells looked safe, you know, from relegation and even the threat. And obviously, Finn Harps came on that incredible charge to secure their spot in the Premier Division. But it unravelled spectacularly for Shells, didn't it?
It did, yeah. It's a hard one to take, obviously. I think they had back-to-back wins. I think it was Sligo and Waterford, and I think they thought, you know, that might be enough, that getting to that 19 points at the time. And, you know, again, they just took their foot off the pedal. And when that happens, it's very difficult to get yourself refocused because the mindset changes completely. And then that hammering they took in the cup from Athlone didn't help in relation to confidence. And I think you're seeing going into the last few games that they were devoid of any real confidence in the team, you know, and it's a huge blow for them, absolutely huge blow for Shelton. I'm sure there's a lot of soul searching at the moment going to go on and sit down and see where the club is, because, you know, there's been massive strides made for Shelburne over a period of time, and there's a new owner in there obviously as well, and, you know, it's not exactly what he would have wanted, you know, to get promoted last year, get back to where they were. In fairness to Shells, before, they're probably the biggest hit with the club from COVID-19, because before then the crowds were fantastic, they were doing quite well, and you know, everything was rosy, and then a short time later they find themselves back in the first division, which is a nightmare scenario for their supporters who've been very loyal to them over a period of time. That's not taken away from Longford Town. It's a great achievement for them to get back in the Premier Division, but I think Shells need to sit down and see where they're going longer term. I think it needs a strategy, not just that you're up and down, you get promoted. You know, it's where the club is going. You know, is the Daily Mount project happening? When does it happen? And trying to build everything around that, if that's where the club is going. So, like I said, there's a fair bit of talking and soul searching will go on over the next few weeks at Shells, I'd imagine.
All right, let's move on. Vinnie Fagherty has called time on his career, a 14-year career that spanned several clubs, including St. Pat's, Dundalk, Limerick, Sligo Rovers, even played in Cyprus and Australia, but of course, most synonymous with his native Galway, with Galway United. Vinnie's on the line. Vinnie, you had a few spells. Was it 3, 4 or 5 different spells with Galway United? You kept coming back to them.
Thanks a million for having me. Yeah, a Galway lad. It always makes sense to be here, but you know, for one reason or another, I went elsewhere at different periods, but you know, I always took great pride in playing for Galway.
Yeah, I think it was 5 in total, was it?
4, I think, but yeah, I think it was 4.
I think it was 4. Yeah, and talk to me, because you were a Galway United, you're from Moycullen, but you're a Galway United supporter from a very young age.
Yeah, my father would have, you know, I suppose we're from a GAA stronghold and would have always played GAA growing up, but there was no local soccer club out here. You know, we're 15 kilometres from the city, so we played a lot of soccer with my friends, but always the Gaelic, I suppose, in the team environment growing up, but would have gone to going United games with my father. Would have got in every Friday night. I remember going in before there was any stand, even in Kerryland, where it was just banks around the pitch. But yeah, it was a dream come true, I suppose, to sign for them in 2007 and get to play in the Premier Division.
You mentioned there, you know, your native area, Moycullen, and of course, obviously, Moycullen had a few lads on the Galway team beaten by Mayo in the Connacht final. But it's a good soccer area as well, because John Russell hails from Moycullen. Éire Davran's father was also from that area, so there's football there.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. I suppose most people in Moycullen would go to school in town, whether it be St. Mary's College, like myself. Steve Jordan would have been in St. Mary's too, or the Bish, like John Russell. So there'd be a lot of lads playing soccer, and Salt and Devon Elf kind of come out the side of the city too. So a lot of the kids in Moycullen, you know, are 5-6 minutes away from Drum. So, it would be a soccer area also, but mainly a GAA stronghold. We won our first ever county title there this year, senior county title, and there's a lot of lads on the senior panel. I would have played with Gareth Bradshaw growing up. He'd be a good friend of mine. So, yeah, look, we have a big connection to the GA, but I suppose you can mix and match, can't you?
Yeah, did you play much Gaelic football growing up, or hurling?
No hurling. I played up until minor. I played one, maybe two senior championship games for Mike Cullen before signing for Galway United. Obviously, then once I signed a professional contract, that knocked the GA in the head. But I still love Gaelic. I go to all the games. I travel all the way around the country, and obviously we'll go to the Mike Cullen senior games. But you never know. I might get down training with them now a little bit. I'm living quite close to the pitch.
And in terms of Galway United and the Galway United support, where in Galway is it largely drawn from? I mean, is it more or less the city, or is it scattered around the county?
It's kind of scattered, to be honest. The city is really is a soccer stronghold. It's definitely the biggest sport in the city. There is quite a few senior Gaelic teams in around the city, but soccer is the main one there. The support is kind of scattered. It won't mainly come from the city, but I think the club, that's the challenge for them, is to get people into Townland on a Friday night. It's obviously a bit of a commute, and traffic in Galway is an absolute disaster, so people probably put people off coming in, getting caught in the rush hour traffic on a Friday evening. But that's, I suppose, the challenge now, is to bring people in from the commuter towns like Loughrea or Ballinasloe.
Vinny, I'm always a bit cautious about you guys on the West saying you're retiring from football, because we have Alan Keane said he retired from football, then went back and won a championship. We had Raf Cataro last year telling us he retired from football and came back with Finn Harps. So if John puts the hand out next season, is it a definite no?
No, it's a definite no. I can see, I suppose, how lads, get drawn back in. It's such a big part of your life, but it's something I mulled over for quite a while. And I just feel like, when you can't contribute the way you used to be able, or the way you feel like, it's just frustrating, I suppose, where you're coming to training and you're trying to compete with a 21, 22-year-old, and your body just can't do what they can do, especially when you're not in a full-time environment. If you're working and that, you can't really put in the extra hours to try and get yourself right. So, it kind of came to that this year. I loved them and part of it, but I just didn't feel like I could give, the team as much as I probably should have been able. So I wouldn't like to come back and not do myself justice and kind of go out with a whimper. So that was also a bit of a part of it. I wanted to go out on my own terms.
Vinny, where do you think you played your best football, or what did you find was your most enjoyable spell?
Probably Limerick to Galway, 2015-2016. It's when I would have scored my most goals. I think I kind of wasn't as mobile as I probably was earlier in my career. I ran the channels a lot less, and I probably ended up meaning that I was in the box a lot more to score more goals. And I suppose, I was kind of, it was something I only realised later in my career, but I kind of needed a certain system to really thrive. I needed quick wingers around me. Lads that would put a lot of balls in the box. That's where, if you look back, and I look back at my goals, pretty much all of them are one-touch finishes in the box, where it's great balls in. I was quite good at getting myself into good positions, but I wasn't the quickest player in the world, so I wasn't going to flash in the chance, from nothing. Limerick in 2015 had that with Ian Turner and Dean Clark, both sides of me, two really fast guys that could stretch the play and give me a little bit more space. And then the same with Galway the following year. But yeah, then if I found myself in a team that liked to play on the break or counter-attacking football, I kind of struggled. I couldn't offer as much. Probably those two periods, 2015-2016.
Who was the toughest defender you played against?
That's a good question. Jesus, a few. I always hated pretty much, anyone down in Cork. It was a disaster. Anyone really that was, I was quite physical, so if they were also physical, it was always tough. Someone like Gavin Pearce, where, another lad might have the legs on him and could run him in behind, I couldn't. So if he was more physical than I was, then I was probably, I was in a bit of trouble. But this year, I suppose, you know, came up against Huey Douglas one day up there. He really, really dominated me. It was probably at that moment that I knew, you know, it's definitely time. You know, you're making the right decision there. That was, there's been a few, but yeah, typically anyone that was very physical, you know, I would have struggled a little bit against.
Well, you're leaving the scene, but you're leaving the scene at a time when the potential for Galway United is huge. Obviously, the Comers are investing there. John Caulfield is in. He's looking at a full-time setup for Galway in 2021, which is going to be fascinating. There's huge potential because, obviously, as you say, if Galway City is a soccer and a, you know, perhaps a Gaelic football stronghold, and obviously got Connacht Rugby there as well, but the potential for Galway United, it's never really been exploited to its maximum, has it?
No, it definitely hasn't. They're right to note it, and I definitely feel like, you know, it's never gone to where it could have. There's been times where it looks like it might turn the corner, but I think as a club, there's just too much of a reliance on, you know, if we're successful on the pitch, the crowds will come. Well, I personally feel like you need to build it off it. You need to get the community factor and really build a relationship with, you know, clubs and people in the community. Because results are just too fleeting, you know. You can have a spell of 2 or 3 years and that's great, but if you haven't built the foundation, I think the best example is Connacht Rugby. You know, they weren't always very good on the pitch, and I remember when I first started playing League of Ireland in 2007, Galway United's average attendance was higher than theirs. But that's changed because Connacht really made an investment in getting out into the community and building those structures. It obviously takes a lot of money, so that's obviously a holding back factor. And if it's invest in the community or invest in your first team squad, you know, pretty much everyone's going to always pick the latter. But it is an exciting time. I think, you know, John's going to do great things there. You know, he's a great appointment, and I can see, you know, you're making a great challenge for the first division title. And you know, if you go up, then anything's possible.
So, are you going to do any? Are you going to play any sort of sport at all? Are you going to continue with junior football or anything like that, or is that out completely?
No. I definitely would like to keep playing. And I'd say, you know, my fiance definitely liked me out of the house in the evening because I'm working from home at the minute. So she'll definitely be encouraging that. But I wouldn't mind taking my knee isn't. I have a little bit of an issue with my knee, so I'll take a few months out and assess that, and then. Yeah, it'd be nice to go back and maybe play for Saltfield Devon again. You know, it's the club I started with, and I'd like to go back and try and help them maybe win a Galway League.
Complete the circle. Well done. Listen, fair play, Vinny. Many thanks for joining us on the RT Soccer Podcast, and best of luck for the future. Thanks.
Thanks a million for having me. Have a good one.
No problem. Now, results in the Women's National League over the course of the weekend. Athlone Town 2, Bowes 1, a third win of the season there for Athlone. Emma Donoghue scoring a brace. Galway United 0, Wexford Youths 2, Orla Conlon and Ella Malloy. Malloy, of course, in sparkling form this season. On target yet again. Peamount United 3, Cork City 0. Anya Gorman once again amongst the goals. She remains the league's top scorer. And Treaty United 0, DLR Waves 3, Averill Brearley, Carla McManus and Catherine Cronin, Catherine, old friend of the podcast, scoring for DLR Ways at the weekend. In terms of Group 1, well, it's Shelburne and Peamount United setting the pace. Shells top of the table with 28 points, one ahead of Peamount, but Shells have played a game more than Peamount Wexford Youths in third on 21 points. Lads, the Cup quarterfinals, of course, we already know that Athlone Town have booked a place in the semi-finals. They'll face the winners of Bowes and Dundalk. That game is live on RT2 television this Friday night. Bowes against Dundalk. We'll start with you, Pat, on this one. Difficult enough one to call because obviously Bowes, boosted by the news that Keith Long and Trevor Crawley have committed themselves to the club for the next 4 years, taking on Dundalk, who have finished their league season certainly with a whimper. They've still got Europa League football as well to contend with. But how do you see that one going?
Well, I think Bowes go into the game as favourites. I think on the back of the league season they've had, they've been fantastic again. And you know, the Split Rovers and Dundalk, you know, it's a great achievement for them. They, you know, they've played some good football as well. So I'm sure they'll go into the game really, really confident. With Dundalk, you just don't know at the moment. We watched them in the European games and you think, yeah, they look back to themselves or close enough back to where they were. But then they come into some league games and their form dips again. So it's a difficult one to call. I think it's a big game for Dundalk, you know, because it's the last chance of obviously silverware for them. And you know, if they get knocked out of the cup as well at quarter final stage, and you know, finish where they are in the league, then it's been a poor season for them. You can point to the Europe, and it has been a great achievement to get into the group stages again, but domestically it would be really poor. But I fancy Bowes to win the game.
Okay, I'm going to go for Dundalk to win on penalties. Paul, how do you go?
Yeah, it's for me, Adrian, I think this is the benchmark for Filippo, because the league form has been so hit and miss, like Pat mentioned, and, you know, for probably a bit of good fortune, the qualification into Europe was superb. But I think given the fact that they have time to prepare, they've no real excuses this time out with regards to fixtures or their team. I just think when I've seen Bowes play Dundalk this season, I think energy and pace is really starting to get at the Dundalk team, and I think that's the way that you hurt Dundalk, and I think Bowes have that in abundance, and given the form that Danny Grant's in, I think he could be somebody that could cause a lot of problems. And let's not forget, Bowes finished 11 points ahead of Dundalk in the league, and I just think, like Pat said, I just fancy Bowes this time out.
Okay, James, how do you call it?
I think I'm going to go with the lads. I think I'm just thinking off the top of my head the last time these two actually played each other in the Cup, and I think it was a quarter final in 2012 was the last time they actually played each other in the FAI Cup, and I think Bowes might have just come out on top of that one as well. So I think they will do this on Friday night as well. I think Bowes have the momentum. They're such a young squad that they seem to be over the moon every time they go onto the pitch. They're happy playing football, and as Paul said, this is where Filippo has to earn his stripes in the league. Like the last time, 5 years ago maybe, the last time Dundalk didn't finish the league with some kind of silverware, and this could be the first time for them this year as well.
Pat, Finn Harps against Shamrock Rovers, it's on Friday evening at 5:30 live on Watch LOI. Also the Sligo Rovers Derry City game will be live on Watch LOI. Harps against Shamrock Rovers, I mean, the smart money would suggest that Shamrock Rovers are going to be really out to do the double, of course. Finn Harps, though, finishing the season with a lot of momentum. Ollie will have his troops well wound up. How do you see this one playing out?
Yeah, listen, I think, like you say, everybody will fancy Rovers, and rightly so. It's a tough game for Rovers. I can imagine what Ballybuffet is going to be like on Friday. You know, pitch hasn't been good over the last couple of games, even though they've done great work to get it ready. But it's going to be a tough enough game for Rovers, but I still think they've got the quality. You know, Harps go into the game, you know, obviously having the success sustained in the league, and it's a little bit of a free hit for them in relation to getting themselves into a semi-final of a cup. And what a scalp that would be if they could turn Rovers over. But I just think Rovers have too much quality around the pitch. I think defensively, Rovers have been fantastic this year. All their attacking players are getting real plaudits, and they deserve them. But I think at the back and the goalkeeper, they've been different class. And, you know, as well as that, they've got that hunger now. You know, they won the cup last year, and I said at the time, that can be a catalyst for everybody, because you get that feeling of a group and you're building something, you know, and they won't want to let that go. They've had success now with the FAI Cup. They've had success with the league title. Can they back to up with another FAI Cup? So I fancy Rovers to go through.
What about you, Paul? Because obviously Shamrock Rovers wrapped up the league several weeks ago. They've had plenty of time to discuss and focus on the FAI Cup. They'll want the double now, won't they?
Oh, 100%. And the fact that they have that know-how of winning competitions and that winning feeling, like Pat mentioned, this group would be so determined to go on and particularly achieve the double and back it up, that unbeaten season that they've had. But Finn Harps is a different proposition than when the draw was probably made, in the sense that they've picked up quite a bit. And I can't imagine Ollie has the rollers out on the pitch this week. I'd say they're probably praying for rain up there, and make it as dogged and difficult for Shamrock Rovers, because they do like to get the ball down and play. But, you know, like you mentioned, the smart money would tell you that Rovers are going to win. They've only conceded one goal in their last 10 league games. They're firing on all cylinders going forward, and they've a superb record against Finn Harps. So it's very difficult to bet against them on this occasion.
James, how do you call it?
I think you have to. Your brain has to reel this one. You have to suggest that Shamrock Rovers are going to win this one. I would love, and actually, to tell you the truth, I would love to have had a camera at 2:30 yesterday on Ollie to find out where he was, because I'm sure he was itching to be on a bench in the playoff final, as he has done for the last number of years. But they've bet Pats on the way to this. They bet Pats at home initially, then they bet Bray away. So anything can happen. They haven't let a goal in the FAI Cup this season yet, so anything can happen on Friday, but you would think that the quality of Shamrock Rovers is just enough to get them over the line.
I have to go along with that. We'll start with you, James, because you're the Derry City man on the podcast. Sligo Rovers against Derry City?
Sligo Rovers win.
Okay, I agree with that, so. Paul?
Yeah, Sligo, for me, are a bit of a dark horse for this competition. I think they'll beat Derry. Derry have been so disappointed. You know, we were kind of hoping that they'd kick on and they'd built a good nucleus within the squad, and you thought as if they'd maybe turned a corner, but they've just been so poor, and I think Sligo will beat them. And Sligo, just given that bit of momentum, I don't want to get your hopes up here, Adrian. But yeah. Okay. I just, here we go. I think they could be a bit of a dark horse. I know they'd have to play Rovers in the semi-final, but just on a once-off, I think, you know, they just, for some reason, they stand out. Maybe it's given the good record that they've had in the cup, but I think they'll get past Derry, and I think they'll set up a nice semi-final tie with Shamrock Rovers.
Pat, are you surprised, as a former Derry City manager, are you surprised the way the season has ended for them? Because going into the final round of matches, there was a risk that they could have ended up in the playoff spot.
Yeah, and I think there would have been expectancy that they would have been challenging for that fourth spot, for that maybe that European place. I think when you looked at the start of the season, the squad was strong enough, and it lost a few players, I know, but they'd brought in a few as well, and I would have had them in that position of sort of behind probably the top three and fighting it out with one or two other clubs, Pats themselves, Sligo, in relation to that fourth spot and potential European position. And they've been really, really disappointing. You know, they have been, there's no doubt about that. It's been a poor season for Derry from the standards they set. So, but again, you know, it's a cup quarter final, and it's Sligo are on the up, you know, and you'd fancy them at home to go and win the game, but I'm not sure it's as clear-cut as the other lads, to be honest. I think that might be a tight game.
All right, listen, lads, we'll leave it there. Paul Corry, Pat Fennan. James, I just got a text. There's a case of St. Mel's beer on its way to you. Congratulations. Well done. It worked. Lads, until the next time, thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.